a bow. As soon as I did that, as soon as I hit record, the cat woke up. That's great. That's what you want.
Good morning, cat.
Maybe it's like a hypnotism word. Record.
Oh, yeah.
When I snap my fingers and say record, something will happen.
Yeah, some operant conditioning. That's right. I learned about that in psychology class.
Cat John Snow's bell?
Yeah.
Remember, Murphy's Law.
Anything Murphy had a lot of laws.
Anything that can be done to uninspire and demoralize will be done to uninspire and demoralize.
I thought it was called...
Yeah, it sounds like our old job.
Well, it's actually not too far removed from what I'm talking about.
Ah, of course.
Very good. Okay, let's go. Welcome, everybody, to Nothing to Fear, a weekly horror movie podcast hosted by me, Billy Schultz. Joining with me are Luke Mason and Alex Wan. And every week, we talk about a different horror movie. But before we talk about the movie we're going this week, I want to check in, because we had a week off recording. And so, Luke, how have you been? How have you spent your days?
I have been well. I have been playing Frisbee, and I have been working at the Nelson and District Youth Center.
Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, watching the playoffs, watching a lot of TV shows. Pretty standard stuff, actually. If you didn't know, you would have guessed it.
What's been on your watch list lately?
Oh, well, I can't. You're asking me to reveal something to cheer right now, Billy. I don't know if that's totally fair.
What are you not watching?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've finished the first half of season 4 of Stranger Things already. So
how many episodes are there all together?
Seven.
There's seven.
But the seventh one was like an hour and 40 minutes.
It was 100 minutes long.
It's a movie.
Wait, so they're
it's a movie.
Are they all out at once, or are they?
Yeah, the first seven are, and then like on July 1st, there's part 2, which I think is just two
more episodes. Okay.
A lot of shows are doing that now. Ozark did that.
Of course, you know why shows are doing that?
Better Call Saul.
They got to keep their subscriptions, right? If you release everything at once, everyone's going to binge it all in a weekend and then cancel it. But, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
It's called shitty strategy, but whatever.
I think there's also some sort of like cutoff line for like award nominations. I don't know if this is how true this is, but it's like if some of your show comes out after a certain point, it's like eligible for next year's award seasons. I know that Better Call Saul was doing that explicitly, but
that's probably fucking dumb. Well, sorry.
I also I mean, I believe it's called the mid-season finale at this point.
The mid-season finale. Yeah, it's just a thing now.
And the last 5 minutes of the mid-season finale of Better Call Saul was just fucking awesome. It was like, you know that moment in a movie or a TV show where something happens and your feelings knew that that's what should have happened, but you didn't think about it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, oh yes, that's actually the perfect thing. But
your intuition was like, this is what you want.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. My subconscious was very flattered by the writing decision of the mid-season finale of that show.
So you watched Stranger Things as well, which was very long and very 80s.
And there's one that is going to be my something to cheer, so I will not reveal it yet.
I have a feeling I know which one it is. But anyway, we'll check in with Alex. Alex, how have you been? How's your time off been?
It's good. It's been... feels like a long time since we've chatted, you know?
It really does.
But it's only been 2 weeks.
14 days.
I know.
If you ask the kids, they might say it's been a fortnight.
That's 2 weeks. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, Luke.
Yeah.
No problem.
What have I been up to? Well, the reason we didn't record last week is because I had a wedding to go to, and that was a ton of fun. There was a toonie bar, so drinks were a-flowing.
Those are dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Any non-Canadian listeners, a toonie is what we call our $2 coin.
Yeah,
it's a totally normal
fucking ridiculous
word for a totally normal currency.
Well, I mean, the logic is non-existent because we call the $1 coin a loony because it has a loon on it, but there's polar bears on the $2 coin, so it should be a berry, but it's not. It's a toonie. It's two,
It's a toonie. It's two loonies.
But it's not even spelt like T-W-O-O-N-I-E. It's T-O-O.
It's just like T-O-O-N-I-E.
Yeah, like loony toonie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, toonie bar. So you're having a toonie bar.
Yeah, it was a toonie bar. Drinks were plenty. Dance floor was fun. DJ fucking sucked, okay? Let me tell you something, okay? When you're DJing a wedding and beforehand you have guests request songs, don't play the remix of the song that you made in your basement, okay? Nobody wants to hear that. They just want to hear the song they requested, okay? If I request Timber with Pitbull and Kesha, I want the full song. Yeah. I don't want the first verse and then your shitty, like, 2013 dubstep remix at the end, okay? Mm. Like, don't do that. Amen. Okay? But it was fun. I had fun.
All right.
That was my one and only complaint. But yeah, seeing old friends and hanging out with people, that was a lot of fun. I've been watching sports as well. And that's been going well. And I've been playing sports as well. That's been going well as well. And, just, you know, just starting summer plans and stuff. So, yeah, nice. it's been a good couple of weeks. What about you, Billy, awesome. Since no one's asked you?
Oh, yeah, thanks, Alex. It's been good. It's been wrapping up a summer course for Concordia here, history of psychology, which has been interesting and informative, if a little bit dense sometimes. Who knew? Who knew thinking about the mind and how the mind processes things was such a robust topic.
Do they teach you phrenology?
We talked about phrenology.
Or is that an obscure topic now?
It's completely disregarded as any sort of medical proof. It's phony baloney to the max. But yes, we learned a little bit about Gall and his practice of phrenology and how they were like, this is our proof that some types of people are less than other types of people.
Well, you know what they say, those people with big prefrontal cortexes, right?
Big hats.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say they're great drivers, but okay.
Oh, yeah.
Big hats. Yeah. So, yes, the skull bumps, they all say things. And, you know, even though it's the bumps on the skull aren't representative of what you know, it did lead to sort of the idea that different emotions and stuff are accessed in different parts of the brain. So it like had a kernel of help later on, but widely it's bullshit. So that's right. I'm coming out strongly against phrenology here, and I don't care. Who knows it? But I actually have a confession to make as my week goes. And it's
here we go. Spicing it up a bit here.
I haven't seen Annihilation before you get
oh my
excited.
God.
Sorry.
We had 2 weeks, sorry, Billy. 2 weeks. We had a whole
that's
fortnight.
That's what I was going to talk about. I was just going to say that I don't think I can ever criticize a horror movie character for going into a situation that could be dangerous, because I have proven that I lack that sort of sense of self-preservation. I was going for a walk the other day, and there's this little place outside my apartment that they store like snow plows and like construction materials and stuff. And so it's this fenced off area with a gate at one end and then like a little cul-de-sac. And it's like a one in, one out. There's one entryway. You have to come out the same way you get in. And if you go in there, you're basically in a trap. And I'm going for a walk and I just see some sort of animal that I've never really seen. It turned out to be a groundhog, like a for real groundhog, not like the little Richardson's ground squirrels we have in Alberta, but like a big groundhog. Spring's here. Yeah, I knew it. It was here. Didn't see a shadow. So I see this groundhog and I'm like, what kind of animal is that? Not checking my surroundings at all. I just walk into this blind one entry, one exit way alley. And go in and walk pretty deep before I'm like, you know, if this was a horror movie, I would roundly shame the person for going in without regard to their safety. And so I am just as bad as all those idiots who say, what was that? I'm going to go check it out by myself because I live to tell the tale, though.
What did you think the animal was at first?
I don't know. I thought it was like a rabbit, but it was way bigger and way stouter. And then I thought it was actually what I originally thought it was. I thought it was a wombat because that's the only reference I've seen in the wild, which is odd. But I did live in Australia for a year and I did experience.
Yeah, in the deep suburbs of Montreal, we get wombats.
There's only two places in the world there are marsupials, Australia and Montreal.
Yep, that's a fact. That's scientific. Yeah. And so anyway, I will go into danger without regard for my own personal safety. I guess that's just me. But yeah, I also watch Stranger Things, and as I suspect the show that we will be talking about in Something to Cheer, I also watch I think I know what it is.
There's two possibilities.
I think your feelings betray you on this one, Billy. Your feelings betray you on this one.
I'm leaning more on the other one that I also haven't watched yet, but we'll probably start watching today. if it's like a show that has come out.
It's a TV show.
No, it's not? Okay.
To Kenobi or not Kenobi? That is the question.
Oh, wow. I tripped over this hint you dropped. Clang. Yes, okay, we'll talk about
yes,
that.
Yes, it's
after,
actually Hamlet. Yeah, otherwise... I love my Hamlet show.
They made a 7-part series on Hamlet on available on Netflix. It's really good.
Oh, or we could say to Hisogy or not to Hisogy.
Hisogy.
Hisogy. Yeah, I don't know. Is it Hisogy or Hisogy? I saw it so many times I don't even remember.
Well, don't say it 5 times, and apparently Hisogy has a very low definition of what singing his name means, but anyway, we'll get into that. In a little bit, because we are talking about the movie Headcount this week on the show. Mm-hmm. And Alex, it was your pick. Mm-hmm. What did you know about this one before we watched it?
I didn't know anything about it. You know,
me neither.
You being you picked the theme, and me being me was like, I don't have knowledge about horror movies, so I'm gonna do a Google. And I would say I actually spent a lot of time trying to find a movie that fit the summer camp or the summer theme.
Okay.
The obvious one was Midsummer, but we did that last year. Or 2 years ago. How long was it ago?
It was last year.
Last year.
Yeah.
Right.
Although this episode is going to come out, which is as close to the second anniversary of Nothing to Fear as possible. Like, this one comes out on the 20th, and our first episode was June 22nd.
Oh, congratulations to us.
Mm-hmm. Woo! 2 years. Anyway.
Yeah. So I would say I actually did an extensive amount of research, like an unnecessary amount of research.
I googled three things.
So I googled like summer movies and summer camp movies. I googled a bunch of things, and then I was looking at lists, and like a lot of them were things that we have seen before, or they look like slasher movies, or they were things where I looked at the title, I looked at like the kind of plot synopsis, I was like, this doesn't sound very good. And then I stumbled upon this one from one of the lists, and I looked at, like, without like trying to spoil myself, I looked at what people were saying about it, and like just really quick, like the one sentence reviews, and it seemed kind of split. Like, some people really loved it, some people didn't like it, but the tone of the movie and like the kind of idea behind it seemed like something I would like. It's a brightly lit horror movie. There's cool camera things and whatnot. So I was like, okay, I picked it. So I picked Headcount without knowing really anything about it. To fit the theme, of course, right? Because I want to be a team player.
Yes. Great. Yeah. And yeah, the summertime horror movie is like the pie chart of what horror movies happen in the summer. Slashers take up a very large piece of that pie. And we're all feeling the slasher burnout, I think, pretty intensely. And I didn't know a single thing about this one, except for what you explained. And one of the things I got stuck on for a long time was, why is it called Joshua Tree? Because that's where the movie takes place.
Because Bono wanted it to be called that. Duh.
Is that why?
Yeah, of course.
Bono decided what it was called.
What's called Joshua Tree?
The place where it takes place. Like, they're in Joshua Tree National Park. And that's sort of what got me stuck on. And I was like, why is it called the Joshua Tree? And apparently it was just Mormons. Mormons did it.
Oh, it was Mormons?
Oh, you're asking why the park is called Joshua Tree. I thought you meant the movie. I was like, that's not the name of the movie.
Ah, guys, I watched Joshua Tree. Shit. Oh, no. I watched a YouTube video.
So the Mormons just named that tree the Joshua Tree?
Yeah, because I think I did a little bit of research on why is it called a
extensive
Joshua Tree. Or why is extensive research. Why it's called the Joshua Tree National Park, and it's named for the trees, which were named for, I guess, when Mormons were moving out west exploring. The trees looked like they were Joshua extending his hands out for supplication. And so they were just like, okay, this tree looks like Joshua. We'll call it the Joshua Tree.
Goodbye, Jericho.
See ya, Jericho.
Yeah, because they definitely knew what Joshua looked like. Holy shit.
Oh, yeah. It was on their tablets or whatever that no one is allowed to look at.
The Mormons knew what everything looked like.
Yeah. Mormons know what everything looks like all the time. Also, yeah, I wrote in my notes before watching this movie, because we took a week off, the only reason I remembered what the title of this movie was without asking you was because I finished the edit for Lake Mungo and had just heard it. Oh. I was like, oh, right. Okay, good. I don't have to ask. I remember what it is.
I'll be honest. I didn't really remember the name either, because when I was going to watch the movie, I kept searching Headshot, and I was like, I can't find this movie.
You're like, shit, what have you?
Well, this is great, because all three of us are in exactly the same boat. I had never even heard of this movie before.
So exciting.
Our ignorance was palpable going in.
Mm-hmm. Like, this was like a very indie movie, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, super indie, no big names, like nobody I recognized.
It doesn't even have a fucking Wikipedia page.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Whoa.
I think you mentioned that.
Crazy.
So.
Jeez.
It's
how are we going to summarize it?
I think that's Alex's one job. He said that's all he's going to do, so I leave it in his capable hands. But, yeah, so we don't know anything about it, or we didn't know anything about it, and then we watched it, and we're going to talk about it, but we're going to hear the trailer first, and then we're going to spoil the movie. Also, blanket statement, check out doesthedogdie.com for any triggering parts. There is, towards the end of this movie, for people who are worried about triggers, there's a couple scenes of some self-harm, including a pretty intense wrist-cutting scene. So that's probably the biggest, most obvious trigger. And also, there's a not broken ankle, but it's pretty gross to look at. So just know that if you decide to watch it. And we're going to talk about it after you hear the trailer.
Really glad you came out here, man. I know it's not as fun is partying it up in the dorms.
I'm Zoe.
I'm Evan.
So what are you guys doing now?
Headed back to the place where we're staying, I guess.
You should come back with us. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
What was that?
I don't know.
Hello?
What happened?
Nothing. We thought we saw somebody.
There's definitely something strange going on here.
Have you been feeling off or different lately?
What the hell?
It was like I was a passenger in my own body.
I know this sounds insane, but I think I started something. Summoned something. I don't know why, but this thing has it in for groups of five.
See, I knew that there was no Wikipedia page, so I did some extensive research, and I actually made my own thing.
We keep using that word.
Wow.
I don't think it means...
extensive research. Hey, if you can't look it up in a minute, it's extensive. Okay, we're in a time and age where, yeah. Yeah, okay.
If you have to tab over to the second page of Google results, it might as well not exist. Like, forget it.
All right. Headcount is a 2018 film written and directed by L. Callahan. When newcomer Evan joins a group of teens on a getaway in Joshua Tree, he reads aloud a mysterious chant by the campfire. From that moment, someone or something is among them. As unsettling, inexplicable events become more frequent, Evan realizes this summoned shape-shifting creature is targeting them to fulfill a deadly ritual.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
There it is. So, Alex, you picked this one. Go ahead with your initial thoughts.
I quite enjoyed this movie. It didn't feel like anything new, but it did feel quite unique for, I guess, in my recent history, like, of horror movies. Like, it's very different than anything that we've watched within, I don't know, the last couple months. It's very slow, for sure, but I don't know. I felt the characters were semi-interesting enough, and the dialogue and acting was believable, that where I wasn't like, oh my god, this movie is so slow. But then when it kind of actually ramps up to when shit is happening, like, it's very tense. This was, as I put in the WhatsApp chat, a butt clencher, or my butt was clenched the whole time. Yeah,
it's a real,
it was just like really creepy, really tense, and you don't really know how it's going to end until it does end, and you're like, oh wow, that's how it ended? That's pretty wild. Kind of minimalistic, but I think, like, that's the kind of shit that I really like. It gave me a lot of It Follows kind of vibes.
Yes, yeah, I had that note as well. It was very It Follows.
Very similar, and, like, I loved It Follows, so, like, naturally I quite enjoyed this movie as well. And I think it's a really interesting idea based off of kind of like the old, like, mid 2000s to mid 2010s, kind of like the internet forums of like, I don't know, like the Tumblrs of creepy urban legends.
The creepypastas, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. So I kind of like the uniqueness of that. And I thought it was shot beautifully. And like it, with it being in Joshua Tree National Park, like the landscape and just the wide shots and the way the camera circled around groups and, mm-hmm. and all that was like really cool. Like I really felt that the camera and the cinematography was part, like a huge part of telling the story as well.
Mm-hmm.
I really felt like I was in the room with those people for a lot of this movie. And yeah, mm-hmm. we'll talk about it more, but I think it was like very purposefully and quite masterfully done to kind of help tell the story of how this summoned thing was kind of infiltrating this group. So I really like that. Yeah, overall, I had an enjoyable time with this movie, and I thought it was pretty good.
Nice. What did you think about it, Luke?
This felt, I have no idea if this is factual or not, but this felt like a debut effort of a really talented filmmaker. Mm-hmm. So there were so many flashes of genius, I thought, in this film, and yet some kind of, I don't know, things that left me as, I wouldn't even say mistakes, but just like, I don't know if I, just not how I would have done it, you know? The kind of, like, there were some scenes in this film that I think are breathtakingly good. Like, just, like you said, Alex, the camera work in some of these things was just phenomenal. So the visceral nature of it, I think, was very engaging. The acting was good enough to be engaging, even though, you know, you get the best out of people who aren't famous and maybe haven't been acting that long.
They felt like obnoxious young adults, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe didn't have to like try too hard to pretend. So like all of the things on screen were really good, except maybe the actual Hisoji itself when we see it. I was like, that's what it looks like. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But <Yeah. laughs> I think that there was at least one major structural problem with this movie. And it's like the thing is, it almost feels pedantic to criticize it. Because I did like this movie on balance, but I think this movie made the mistake of giving the audience way more information than the characters had. Because like the whole movie, we know that we're looking for an extra person. So it's kind of just like, where is it? Where is it? And I think that the movie kind of under-delivered on the thrills of looking for that other person. Because almost, other than like one scene, which was awesome, it's kind of like you always know who it is, right? It's like so obviously not the real person in this scene. Or the Hisoji itself, which is this monster that can shapeshift that they've called in, is in a different room. So it's like we know what's going on. And it felt so weird that it was only like the last 10 to 15 minutes of the movie where it like really ramps up, where it's like, oh my gosh, this is the thing.
Right.
I guess I would have liked more of those. I would have liked more of the scenes, like that panning camera scene, because that, like, the tension was really good in a lot of the scenes. But I feel like the movie slightly under delivered on the tension that it promised, and I still liked it. This was definitely a good movie, but I think that those are the little things I notice. Like, for example, for Full Spectrum Cinema recently, we did Blood Simple, which is the first Coen Brothers movie. And you can see in that film what is great about the Coen Brothers that they've done better in later movies. And I feel like this might be that kind of movie for this filmmaker's career. Like, that's just a projection. I don't know even if this is the first one, but it felt like that. It's like, oh, you just kind of missed something here, but I really liked it still.
Yeah, and speaking of the film director, Elle Callahan is the director, and this was her first directorial effort, and, you know, good for her. I was just checking out her IMDb, and she's done a lot of, like, post-production stuff on, like, an Avengers and a Wonder Woman movie, so she's been around, and this was her, like, first go a director.
There's a lot of talent. Like, there's a lot of talent in the direction of this movie.
So good, yeah.
But still like a few kind of almost amateur mistakes, it felt like, in terms of the structure. But like, who cares? She's telling her own story. That's fine. But I think yeah. It was a mistake to have us, the audience, know as much about what's going on as we did. I would have preferred a more mystery unraveling.
Yeah, I think I hadn't consciously thought of that before you mentioned it, but there was something that kind of wasn't sitting super well with me watching this movie. And then to have you sort of express it, it's like, yeah, it would have been interesting if it was more of a mystery. And maybe that we don't even get that little, like, we get like a little opening crawl essentially that says what the poem is, and then you're just like, okay, so there's gonna be a shapeshifter around, and we're gonna keep our eyes out for
Yeah, because like, but, right at the start, right from the hot tub scene, you know that there's something or someone else, right?
And so then since we know that there's something, mm-hmm. and that hot tub scene was great, that thing in the distance, it's just a cool, from a distance, the monster looked cool. But then also, so like, that's the first decision. The second decision then is, when do we show this extra monster that can shapeshift? And when it mm-hmm. was in the movie, it was great, but I just wanted it in the movie more. I wanted more of those kind of confusion scenes than we got, because the ones that we got mm-hmm. were fucking awesome. So I was like, why aren't you doing your best thing more?
I agree. Keep doing it. Yeah, I really like this movie, watching it, and to have it be, again, in such a weird, isolating setting. We've had quite a few of our recent movies be set around these like deserts of Northern California, and how austere and beautiful and isolated it is. It was really cool. I applaud, you know, Elle Callahan for her directorial work behind the camera. I hope she does more stuff. On her IMDb, she's got a movie that came out in 2021 called Witch Hunt, which looks interesting as well, but maybe she'll have honed her craft a little bit more. And I thought this movie was really tense and really fun. It also made me feel fucking old as shit, because these kids are in their like early 20s and they're partying and they're drinking multiple days of the week and on vacation. And I think the oldest I felt in this movie was one of the characters, Nico, had like a Bowser spiky shell backpack. And I remember working with kids and them having those backpacks. And so I'm like, no, those kids can't be grown up enough to be partying in the desert. No. But they can. And I guess they bring their shrooms in there. Old Bowser backpacks now, so it was cool. It was the effects of the creature when we see it, and the shape shifting was a little bit less polished than I think a movie with a bigger budget could have been, but I feel like the effort was as best as you could do with the budget they had. I don't know what the budget of this movie was, but it can't have been you know, superhero movie level. But the not seeing the actual form of the creature at all would have been more effective, rather than if it kind of feels like they were going for a reveal like The Thing, but where The Thing was a masterpiece of like puppetry and animatronics and prosthetics, this was like a 2008 video game, you know, cutscene. You're just like, ah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it looked a little bit like a fly. Like the bug eyes of a fly, plus like kind of like a droid, and it was like a droid alien fly.
A little bit.
It looked like something you'd see in Phantom Menace, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Something else just occurred to me that I loved about this movie, and we'll probably talk about it too. But maybe the strongest part of this film was the on-screen art direction, because the setting. And especially when everything started fiving itself together, like that was.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Like when you see the scope, you know, you talked about Billy, I think in The Shining, about all the behind the scenes work that people do for like just a moment of screen time.
The props. Yeah.
Holy shit. Did this movie rock that? Like they hit, it's like 5 grand slams in a row, you might say, with how good it was. Like I was just.
Oh, so good. Yeah.
Like, the amount of time that went in to get all those bottle caps and pretzels and popcorn and, like, just everything in the house in groups of 5, that was so good.
And I thought they revealed that fiving really well, because it was I think it was the second night when he wakes up and he sits down and there's a picture behind him and it's got five mountain ranges. Like it's got little five mountain peaks. And I'm like, man, this five thing looks like it's coming up. And then you sort of think back and there's a scene earlier where he opens the fridge and you're like, who would put five lemons in a row right at the front of a fridge thing? That's such a weird way to decorate your fridge. And then you sort of like the penny drops and you just see these groups of fives every single place. Even when he looks out on the bocce ball court, Luke, I know you love your bocce, and there's the five balls like all just arranged, and it just, yeah, it was wonderful job to the props department. Big props to the props again, but it also gave me one of my quibbles where I think I shared this with The Conjuring, Devil Made Me Do It, where it's like, if you know that fives are a source of power, or you know this altar is a source of power, start wrecking it. Knock over a bottle. Take a cup away. Like, if fives are how it's getting its shit done, just start rustling things around. Maybe that will limit what it can do. But I don't know. I'd just start making a mess.
They were too busy getting yelled at by Max. Fuck, I hated that guy.
He was illegally tall. That's what I wrote. One of my notes is Max is illegally tall. That guy was so fucking tall. And that, I mean, that brings up a good point.
Obnoxious.
He was, they said like Max is a dick. And so that was his personality. And he all got, I at first thought that I was going to be annoyed that every character just sort of had one little piece of personality. But then it fit because if you're in Evan's shoes, you don't know these people except for just this very cursory thing. So I felt like having them all just be very surface level, what they're doing and like what they're very present in doing as our understanding of them really fit with Evan's sense of like fish out of waterness and newness to this group of people. Because if, for people who haven't watched the movie, he's like, it opens the movie opens with his school friends leaving somewhere. They're like, bye, Evan, see you later. And he's just like, well, I guess I don't have any friends right now. I'll go visit my brother who lives out in the desert and is a weird hippie who has an obnoxious phone message. And then he meets this like group of strangers in the desert and decides to party with them. So it's just like a total young kid getting into mischief, letting life sort of take him where it wants to. And it feels like something you did when you were in your 20s where you're like, yeah, I'm up for whatever. Let's go. And you end up sitting around a campfire with a bunch of people you don't really know that well. And you're just like, okay, so you're Sam. You have glasses and you're Max and you're tall and kind of a dick. And Nico's wearing a blue shirt. Like that's sort of all you get. And I really, really appreciated that because we were playing that along with Evan when we're like, wait, who's this? Wait, what was her name again? Is she Vanessa or is she Haley? Or who is this person? And like, you know, kind of piecing together who everyone is enough to have a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I know I talked about this probably in Annihilation, how it's just like when you're just
Annihilation. Like, we haven't seen Annihilation.
Not a lot. Annihilation. No. What's
the Endless? One?
No, the aliens.
Rough Report?
Alien. The aliens on the
space?
Yeah. The time traveling aliens in space?
Europa Report? No.
No. It was an earlier one we did.
Oh, Event Horizon.
Event Horizon. Time not a lot. Annihilation. Yeah.
So you watched like Annihilation without me and did an episode somehow.
Yeah. In Event Horizon, I talked about this. This was like episode, what, 9? I talked about how like one thing that really bothers me in movies is when they just lambast you with characters and just say their name one time and it pans to them really quickly. And you're like, that's I'm supposed to remember who the fuck this person is now. And they did that in this movie, but it was like, it was done on purpose because like, to your point, like you're looking at this from Evan's point of view. And like, I think that one part where he wakes up after the first night and he's like trying to remember who's who, he's actually saying their names and counting. I thought that was like I've done that before. Like when I run my programs with kids and I meet the group of kids for the first time, I'm doing that. I'm trying to like remember who's who, which kid. Right. And like when I do my little notes, I'm like, all right, this kid has a hat, this kid has glasses. So that's super relatable. And even though I hate it when they do this, when they just introduce like 5 to 10 characters all at once, even though this movie did it, it did it on purpose. And it was like, it actually meant something because Evan's the first one to notice that things are weird and like there's an extra person, but because he's brand new, he's probably super hungover. He's not entirely sure of himself, whether or not there was an extra person. And he's like, no, I'm pretty sure. Okay. But like,
right, he's like doubting his own experience. Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing that I hate about movies was in this movie, but they did it in a way that made sense and that I liked and it was relatable. So I like too many characters all at once, but it was done well in this movie.
I like that they give us a recap the next day where he meets them and like they're at the hike and he meets them. And I think it's Camille is the one who first sort of says who everybody is. And then like the next morning after the hot tub and the party, he like is trying to go through all the couples. And I'm like, oh, we're going to get a little recap.
Oh, no, that was during the hot tub.
Oh, that was during the hot tub, right?
Yeah, because
right,
he's like, tell me the group dynamics. And she just lists off everybody and it just camera pans.
And it just sort of like shows everybody again really quickly. And I was like, oh, we're going to get a recap. And I was like, oh, and that was too fast. But it again sort of made you feel like where you're in a group of new people and you get introduced and you forget everyone's name. And then they're like, oh, okay. You're like, oh, what was everyone's name again? And they go again. And you're like, I still forgot, but now I don't want to ask a third time. So I guess I'll just figure it out.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I have a barber and that I've gone to for maybe 4 years now, 3 or 4 mm-hmm. years. And when he introduced himself, he said something that I thought was his name. But then yep. I've heard other people walk into the shop and call him by a different name. And by like year 3, I'm like, it's way too late for me to clarify what his name was. So I had no idea what his actual name was until he's moving shops. So he wrote down his name and number on a piece of paper. It's like, all right, like, call me, like, I'll tell you when I move to a different shop. So I finally learned his name. Thank you, Wally. But yeah, there comes a point where it's too late to ask someone's name.
Just like, I can't ask. I can't possibly ask at this point. It's like Kelly and I started going to this climbing gym for bouldering, and there's a guy who would be there like when we check in on Saturdays, and I don't think we ever got his name, but now we've gone like 8 or 9 times. And whenever he's there, he actually was gone for a couple of weeks, and we're like, oh, that guy who checked us in was there. What was his name? I don't know. Curly hair? That's probably not his name, but he's, you know, curly hair. And you're just like, it's too late to sort of when you see him, he's just like, oh, hey, it's good to see you. And you don't, no names, don't ask, don't, it's just like, hello,
it's impossible.
Person, I'm interacting with you. There's no way I'm going to know your name forever. You'll just be the curly haired guy who works at the climbing gym. So yeah, it made you feel like Evan would feel in that situation. Off-put, polite, you want to hang out, but you don't know who anybody is. It also made me nostalgic for a good backyard bonfire. But with less monsters.
And maxes.
Less maxes. Okay, so, Hizji, the monster. What do we think about the whole why of this horror movie and the whole metaphysics of how this monster works?
I don't think it's any stranger than any of the other movies we've done with a demon monster, metaphysical entity that attacks human beings.
That's fair.
I think it's like about the same.
Yeah, it's a because demons thing.
Because demons thing.
But why? What? How? You know,
it doesn't because matter. Demons. Well, I made a joke about this earlier, but the opening crawl specifies that if you sing his name 5 times, that's when his G comes. And I don't know if I heard a single note sung in this whole movie. So he's got a real loose definition of what he counts as a song. I guess maybe saying it 5 times. That, you know, it's like, okay. It's a Candyman situation. You say it 5 times, then he appears. But the fact that they specified it was like a singing or a chant or a ritual when he was just reading the thing off of his phone was, I thought it was very silly.
Mm-hmm. What was the website name? Anonymous
Horror? Anonymous Nightmares. AnonymousNightmares.com. They got the .com. That's great.
Is that a real site?
Well, there's only one way to find out. Go, Alex, go.
Horrors?
AnonymousHorrors.com. No, AnonymousNightmares.com.
I assume that this is just a kind of folkloric story of the desert in California or that area of the world. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know?
403 forbidden. Code access denied.
Damn.
Message, access denied.
Well, that's too bad. That's too bad.
Just the whole plot element of the Hisji is... That dive into the unanalyzable, in a sense, because again, these kids are stuck in a world where this exists. And they're just fucked because they don't know that. Like, even, yeah. I mean, I do have some major quibbles with Evan's decision making post him realizing what's going on. Mm-hmm. But, like, how are any of them supposed to talk about this as a real thing?
Right.
You know, like, it's like, imagine us with several friends reading some creepypasta or urban legend. A couple weird anomalies happen. Like, I wonder if this, like, thing is real. And then having it be the case, and we have to, like, operate under mental auspices that are counter to every other thing that we've done for the rest of our lives.
Like, yeah, but we're also super drunk and high at the same time.
Yeah, I just don't think we're set up for success if that's the case.
No one is.
No, you're right.
So it's like, okay, it would have been maybe, here's a slightly more constructive comment, perhaps. It would have been interesting if there had been some way through the narrative for them to have defeated this history, so there was like even a chance of hope, mm-hmm. other than not crossing into the circle that was fucking huge and you didn't see, and all of you crossed and it looked like it was made out of blood.
Yeah,
so like that was
that's a red flag.
How do you not see that?
Yeah.
Especially like, okay, maybe the others are, but Evan has been like paying attention to this shit for like a whole day. He's just been duped by Zoe Hisji, which again he should have done way more due diligence on, considering he knew that she could be a Hisji. Anyway.
Yeah, but he was getting the sex, Luke.
He could have easily have gone and checked the bedroom, because like, if you think there could be a Hisji and this person's by themselves and you don't know, go double check where the person is supposed to be. Maybe.
Yeah,
especially because it's only like fucking 30 feet away.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of times where I was like, why are you not just being sure? Why are you not being sure?
His decision-making became incomprehensible when he started suspecting that this was a real thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I guess the way to defeat it is not enter its lair.
But it also didn't seem like it was bound to that lair. Right, like, you know, we get the scene where he's standing at the board boundary, and you see that it's not just like one house, but it's two houses, and there it's a reflection or somehow, and he doesn't really know. And then he's like trapped in the little shed with the Zoe Hisji, and he's got the lighter, and then it like hard cuts to a burned up shed, and suddenly the house is fine, and then his brother comes and like picks him up, and Evan gets in the car. And it's like, oh, so Evan is his G. Evan is like, this is not Evan. This is his G. But then it's like, why did his G need to get summoned? Like, why didn't it just sort of like, it follows around and like keep walking around, because, you know, it killed that family on the Tumblr that he was reading. And, you know, is there like a time limit? If his G doesn't find like another group of five people after, I don't know, 5 minutes or 5 days, does he
his G off?
Evaporate or something, like, yeah. Just like, oh, I gotta go, I didn't get enough fives in my diet, and so I hope nobody reads this creepypasta again. So, you know, it was just like, if you can summon it, then it can be banished, and if it, you know, can't be banished, then why do you need to summon it? Or, you know,
again, yeah. And with the movie we've compared this one to the most, I think, in tone, and it's accurate, is It Follows. But I think the reason It Follows is a pretty clearly superior film to this one is because It Follows works at both the metaphorical and the plot level. Like, both elements of It Follows are really solid. With, if you take like the monster in It Follows as a venereal disease, for example, that's like a great little kind of meditation on that. And a lot of the feelings of the main character in that one are, there's shame attached to a lot of her feeling, which I think is representative of some of those things, right? But also, it's like, it just chases you and kills you. Like, even though that is also a kind of inscrutable motivation for a metaphysical entity, like, at least it says that's what it's doing.
Right?
Like, this movie doesn't even say, we don't get any of the reasoning or folkloric. We needed a Professorson to come in and tell us why history's got a history. Or something like that. Like, we get a backstory in the sense of, like, this has happened before.
But no why.
And, like, again, we don't really need it, but I think it would have been a better movie if there had been kind of more shoring up around this legend, as opposed to five now dead. And we know that, and the characters should know that, but they're just like intentionally obtuse about this because right. Max just has to be an asshole. And that's
because he wants to go to the mines.
We're not going to talk about anything
right.
to do with our safety because I'm angry.
Yeah.
Like, fuck off, Max.
So was Max the most obnoxious one for you, Luke?
Oh, he was so selfish, too. It was the obnoxiousness and the selfishness that right. I hated about him.
Okay.
Even though the characters were very obtuse about what was going on and they didn't do anything about it, I think one thing that I appreciate about this movie was, you know how in the typical horror movie where something weird's happening, but only really one person witnesses it? Like, we kind of see that with Evan. Evan's really the one person that's digging deeper and notices weird shit. But the party scene where they're playing, is it Ride the Bus or whatever?
Yeah, King's Cup. Yeah. King's Cup or something.
Yeah. And
Sociables.
So, names. Yeah, whatever that circle game was. And it was Sam, right? That mm-hmm. was... In yeah. the circle, but also in the other yes. room?
Yeah, he was yeah. playing beer pong and also in the circle, yeah.
Yeah, a poorer movie would have been like, only Evan notices this. But like, everyone yeah. that was in that circle noticed that. Mm-hmm. And they all were like, how the fuck did you get from here in the circle to back there instantly? And they, like, that's a real question that they're all talking about. And that's kind of like, I don't know, I just like horror movies when all the protagonists are like, on the same page, right?
Yeah,
like,
everyone knows something's up. There's not one yeah. person against the rest of the people. Yeah.
Yeah, which is why I loved the one about the dark so much. Which one was that?
Lights Out?
Lights Out, yeah. Which is why I like Lights Out so much, because everyone was on board right away. But like this one, even though it was really Evan who was only digging deeper, but everyone mm-hmm. did notice something, and they did agree that it was weird. And then they did agree to search the house, because they were like, maybe there is another person in here.
Yeah. And then they got bored and started partying again.
Yeah, okay, the united front aspect of it, you know?
We do yeah. know, you're right, that's a good, I did like that they were together, but we do know two things about Hisjis, or however you pronounce it. One, they can manipulate electricity at will.
Right.
And two, they can disapparate, because yeah. that fucker was just gone. Right? Like, if it still had some, it's a corporeal creature, where the fuck yeah. did it go? Like, did it run away? The lights went off, sure, but there's a light in another room. You can still see it outline. It was just gone, and there was nowhere for it yeah. to go. It's like, okay, well, I guess they're fucked. They're double, triple fucked. Cause
yeah, this thing is so powerful. It can do anything
yeah.
it wants.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and given what they saw, and they all saw it, they should have talked more about Hisjis right then and there.
They definitely should be like, hey, remember that story you read that was a weird yeah. story about shape-shifting monsters? Let's maybe examine that a bit more.
Five of us saw Sam right here, right now in this room, and five of us saw Sam right here, right now in that room. That is right. physically impossible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess the main difference between Headcount and It Follows is we know what's going on, the characters have an idea of what's going on, and we're trying to see how they're going to get themselves unfucked out of the situation.
Yeah.
In Headcount, we know what's going on, the characters don't really, but I will say they kind of know what's going on, but we know they're fucked, so we're just watching till the end to see how they get fucked, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It's like an inevitable fuckery that's going to happen yeah. to them, and yeah. that's the main difference. Because like this Thanos. History thing,
it's inevitable.
This history thing's so fucking powerful, like, it can do all those things you said, Luke. So, you know, these drunk idiots have no chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more of like, it, as opposed to some horror movies having like an element of a final girl or a survivor who's going to make it to the end as like a, you hold on to hope even in the face of odds. This was definitely more of a tragedy where they're like, well, they can't overcome a Hisji. That's a Hisji. Mm-hmm. They can do anything. these guys are doomed.
So you're always looking for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I really
where is it in this
think
scene?
That even though the characters don't take it seriously for long enough after that, that whole section of the panning, constant panning back and forth.
I love that scene.
In the thing where it's just like that 70s show, kind of not really the same comedic timing, but because you're looking and I'm like, okay, are the characters going to swap? And then you start putting in order. You're like, okay, it goes Vanessa, Sam, Haley, Zoe, Evan. Okay, is it going to be the same? And then it's still the same. And so you just know it does such a great job of ratcheting up that tension. And then when Sam pops his head out from the kitchen, all the lights go out. I really like the claustrophobic. I think this is when you talk about the camera work. Either of you mentioned it. But when they're all looking through the house and Max is in the background and I think Evan is like behind him and then there's the camera and it's like both of their backs are looking to the screen and they're looking around. It felt very claustrophobic and it felt like looking for something at a party and just kind of following people around and like they're getting in your way so you can't see everything and you can't see around corners because the camera doesn't like go where you want to look to check. It just felt really tense and really freaky. Yeah,
the way that this was shot always had me looking at the background, right? Which is like, I think is just really impressive thing to force your audience to do, right? Like, we've been primed our entire lives to just focus on what's in front of us. And like, but this movie, it kind of flips it. Like, as soon as you see the history the first time in the background of the hot tub scene, like, I actually rewound it, like, and I was like, was this there the whole time? And it was there the whole time, like, the very first time. But I didn't notice it the very first time until like, after maybe, like, 2 seconds of that shot.
Right.
So I had to back up and be like, were my eyes deceiving me? Was it there the whole time? And it was there the whole time. So now I'm primed to start looking for things. And this goes back to, you know, like, how you make really good horror, right? Like, you prime your audience to, like, be on the lookout for stuff. And sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. A lot of times it wasn't there, but now anytime there's just a blurry thing in the background, I'm like, ooh, I'm not sure. Like, is this thing, is this danger? And like I think this movie would be worth a rewatch, not for like the plot, but just to like look at the different times that there's something fuzzy in the background. And then you kind of notice that, like, once you kind of understand, figure out like how you identify the history, it's someone who's not acting themselves. Right. I think a lot of time they're kind of just doing a really boring activity, like sitting there, just staring.
Yeah, they're sitting
the
there or staring. They're not talking.
Or like eating just by themselves. Right. Like there's scenes where I don't remember the character. There's too many characters. But like one of them goes to the kitchen to grab a drink and the other one is eating at the counter. Right. But it's just in the background. But like in any other movie, you're like, oh, I'm not going to like whatever. I'm focusing on the person grabbing the drink from the fridge. But in this one, I'm looking at that person. It's like, well, that's kind of weird. Like, I feel like in a social situation where everyone's having fun, partying, you know, drinking, whatever, if someone goes in the kitchen and I'm eating something, I'm at least going to glance at them or, like, say hi and be like, hey, like, how are you doing? Right?
Just do, like, one of those head nods or something.
Yeah, but, like, that one scene, they're just sitting there not acknowledging anything, and then you're like, oh, that's weird. Like, that's something that wouldn't happen in a close group of friends in a party situation. And then you follow the character, they walk back in the main room, and that person's sitting there, and she turns around. It's like, oh, that was the history. Yeah. And then you kind of think about more instances of that happening. And I think the very first one was the very first night, after the first night when Evan wakes up and he's walking out towards the shed because he's going out to get his shoes or whatever. And you see, it was never in focus. It was completely blurry. Yeah. But you see, like, there's at least two figures on the couch. And one of them sleeping and the other one, it looks like it was the blonde one.
Yeah, Camille. Whatever.
Camille, right? But she doesn't, like, he says morning, she doesn't acknowledge or say anything to him, and it's just, it feels kind of weird, right? It's something's off about it.
But it's also like, oh, maybe they're hungover, I don't know what these people are like in the morning.
Yeah, but I was, like, so focused on the blurry image of supposed Camille that whole time when he's walking through the house to get out, to get his shoes. So I just thought, like, just the camera work and the angles that they used and the focus that they used, bringing things in and out of focus, was, like, so well done to tell this story specifically.
And then that scene continues where he goes out and you see the blonde figure behind him, and then it kind of like his figure passes over them, and when it goes away it's Zoe. And you're just like, whoa, what the hell? Like, that's like the first time you see it actively shift between two people, and that was one of the like the scarier parts where I was just like, oh no, it's real. It's not just a weird, creepy desert person standing there. It's actually this monster.
Yeah. And then when they go on the hike as well, when they're all sitting there and Zoe is like taking pictures on the cliffside, but she's in the background and it's kind of blurry. And then you see the other girl,
Vanessa.
Was it Tori?
It was Vanessa.
Vanessa. Yeah.
Or maybe Victoria. One of the brunettes was Vanessa, and one of the brunettes was Victoria.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, but you see her walk next to her, and it's just like, I was so focused on that, so it's not like, so when you see her fall off the cliff, it's like, my focus was on Zoe the whole time, even though I didn't know what was happening, because I'm primed to look at the stuff in the background.
So, I guess we have to assume, a la Monsters, Inc., that the Hisjis get more out of the feeding if they just kind of fuck with their prey for a while.
Yeah, it's like a cat and mouse thing.
And just kind of like, why hang out at the party? Like, why is this she playing this drinking game with them? Why,
you know what? Maybe
why sitting eating in the background? Like, like, I just, these are things that aren't even brought up, let alone to be, you know, hand waved away. But it's obviously because it makes the movie really tense and enjoyable, and that's the best part of this film.
Yeah. But maybe the Hisji just wants to, you know, loves cold pizza and really enjoys King's Cup and was like, ooh, I'll play. I'll play for a bit. This will be fun.
It's been a long time since I've had friends. But also, like, I think we're supposed to assume that the Hisji had, like, kind of taken over Zoe's mind, even though it wasn't in Zoe's body or wasn't shapeshifting to Zoe. It was shapeshifting to either Vanessa or Victoria beside her.
Right.
But still has the power to, like, take over your motor functions and throw you off a cliff. But why? Like, this wasn't part of the ceremony. Like, it just, it, I guess the best interpretation is the Hisji doesn't give a fuck and knows that it's going to win no matter what and doesn't care how many times it might accidentally tip its hand to any Hisji savvy Evan types of the world, right? Like, it doesn't matter if you know about me, you're still fucked.
Yeah.
Unless you don't cross the line.
Unless you don't cross the line. And yeah, the whole scene with Zoe jumping off the cliff, while that was very startling and reminded me of Midsommar a bit, just, I don't know how that didn't result in way more injury than not a broken bone at all.
Yeah.
It's just a really bad sprain. Like, it was a bad injury, but I was like, no, that was 40 feet or more onto big rocks. You would be more than a, like, swollen ankle and broken camera. You would be dead.
Yeah. And if not dead, like, certainly fucked up for a long time.
I watched Midsommar. I saw that scene. Spoilers for Midsommar.
I like the description of how Zoe described it. Like, she said she was just like a passenger in her body.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like she didn't jump, she didn't walk off, she didn't get pushed, she was just there and then on the ground the next. And then the scene where she looks up and she sees, I think it was Tori. I think that character was Tori, like, looking down. That was so creepy.
It's so creepy.
And she kind of knows something's off because Tori's right there at the bottom right away, like a couple seconds later, faster than someone could get down.
This is another thing that, Luke, you specifically, you hate it that movies do that thing where they fuck with, like, the physics of like, where things are.
Yeah. How did you get down there so fast?
But this movie did that on purpose as well.
Well, yeah, it's part of the plot because that's, like, what can happen if you have Hisji's.
Yeah,
it's
so
just
I
that
it's
the
just
characters
interesting.
Didn't follow the clues. They just didn't pay attention to that shit.
I think it's just interesting how, like, they had a thing that really irked me about movies and a thing that really irks you about movies, but they were both done on purpose.
Yeah.
And
so
they made sense in the context of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like that. That it's just like, wait, how could she be down there? And then it's like, oh no, that's the reason the monster exists. And that being said, I thought there was a couple red herrings in this movie that I thought would come back at, like, when Evan's friends leave in the first second of the film, and I was just like, are they gonna come back? They didn't come back. And then they pass this group of people on their hike that all have guns, and there's a couple gunshots later on where I was like, oh, is that maybe significant? It doesn't come back. If it's significant, I missed the meaning. It just never was revisited again. So
those are good examples of what I said, of what I meant at the beginning of, like, this being a debut of a filmmaker where, like, the story isn't quite as tight as it might be if you've had a little bit more practice wrapping up strands of a story. Unless, of course, they were intentionally red herrings. Like, yeah, they're the NRA enthusiasts or whatever. Like, what exactly are the gunshots supposed to do for us? So the gunshots and the guys with the guns are scary, except that we know what the monster of this movie is, so it's not scary, because if we see one, it's probably just a Hisji. It's not, like, real people. And if it is real people, that's a different movie, and you've got too many, like, villains again.
Well, and I thought it was gonna be, you know, like The Thing, where there's you know, it opens with the Swedish, Norwegian? I can't remember which one it was, but yeah, like the other Norwegian, the other camp, and they're chasing the dog and they're shooting at it, and everyone's like, oh no, we don't want them to hurt the dog. But so I thought it was going to be like these people were encountering a Hizji and were trying to stop it, and they find sort of the fallout of like a failed Hizji attack, Hizji defense or something. But no, it never sort of panned out that way. Be like, what? They tried to fight something off. Why would this person like shoot somebody? You know,
fuck. I don't know. You bring up the thing. It makes me appreciate MacReady all the more, because finding the thing would have been way harder than finding the Hizji, and they still didn't even come close to finding the Hizji.
They didn't like, do any fire blood experiments.
In the thing, it takes over your like body, but in this one, there's like a whole extra body because it is a physical entity. So it's like, do your fucking head counts.
But as you said, Luke, this Hizji can just disapparate, right?
Yeah.
So it's like,
well, allegedly.
Like when they're all in the kitchen and they're freaking out and the power's gone out, like there are 10 bodies. Like I was every time there were characters on screen, I was doing a head count, right? But then as they're searching the house, you learn that the Hizji was hiding in some like closet or something, because like as they move away and it's like a long shot down the hallway, you see
the door opens.
Like it opens slightly. Then this movie got me counting too many times. Like every time there were fives, every time there were people on the screen, I was just counting. It's like summer day camps all over again.
Summer day camps. Yeah.
The visuals of this movie are stunning, and the tension is great. I just found the characters to be too blasé about their survival in this situation. When I don't care, I've been pretty drunk. I don't get high very often, so I can't really speak to this, but like, I see what is clearly a figure standing about 50 feet away from me in a hot tub. I'm not chill. Like, I'm not just, okay, I was wrong. Like, that was so obviously something that both Zoe and... There's just too many instances of...
It's probably just a tree.
It's probably just a tree.
You fuckers deserve to die if this is how you're going to handle this situation.
But it's also, like... circling back to Max being the worst when he's like, oh, what do you want us to do, lock the doors? It's like, yeah, if everybody you're at a party with is there, lock the door. Like, I don't understand how many times there's the whole thing where it's like, oh, our neighborhood is so safe, you don't have to lock your doors, you don't have to do anything, blah blah blah. Everyone feels so comfortable. I don't care. I lock the door all the time. Like, I have
seen videos of animals opening door handles, okay? Even if it's not a human, I don't want a fucking bobcat in my apartment, you know?
Yeah, I watched Jurassic Park.
Okay, here's a unanswerable question. When Peyton comes to visit, is he real Peyton or Hizji Peyton?
I don't know. I did like that he was like, I'm tracking my little brother because our parents are dead. And then everyone's just like, oh.
It's true. Like, how would a Hizji know that?
I would say it's real Peyton. But like, that scene was specifically... artificial tension, because it's like, I'm locking the doors, there's no one out there, bam, there's someone out there. Okay,
yeah
it's like, maybe it's your creep of a brother. Well, it was your creep of a brother. Also, and it was like,
here's a movie trope: why do people who are coming to houses for just benign or normal reasons always smash the door when they're there? Why don't
it's
they
like
just
knock
politely?
They're like, yeah,
it's just like
which is what he did at the very end, but not the first time he showed up.
Yeah. Maybe he thought it's a party, they're going to be listening to music. But yeah, like, it doesn't make any sense, because they're always just like one sharp knock and you're like, oh, that's
imagine,
a totally normal thing.
Can you imagine going to someone's house and just like body slamming the door to let them know that you're there? Like, it just would be so impolite.
I know how I'm going to greet, announce my presence if I ever visit you in Nelson.
Yeah.
Just, oh, Billy's here.
It's just, that's a horror movie trope I just realized in this movie and think is so funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like people going to houses for normal reasons always are abnormally loud and aggressive at the door.
Knock scarily.
At the perfect timing as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We're always learning new things about movies on this podcast.
Always learning new things. So the movie's like kind of comes to fruition. The big sort of climax part of it is when Evan like is duped into going off onto this extra like excursion to the mines because Max is like, I don't care if there's a monster that can shapeshift and is killing me. My vacation says I have a day to go see the mines, and God damn it, I'm going to go see the mines. And so the party is now split, never split the party, where there is two groups of five instead of 10, which is a multiple of five. So I don't know. But we get back to see that his G has caused the death of
Pause for a second. Okay. Another thing that I hate about movies, and I talked about this in Devil Made Me Do It, but I don't think it was done on purpose for this in this movie, and I will fault this movie for it, is they're out to the mines in the middle of the day. They're driving, but then supposedly Evan figures out right away that he needs to go back. So I don't think that they went very far, but by the time he gets back, it's nightfall. Fucking shot.
Like, what is their excursion? 8 hours away?
Yeah, right?
It took you 8 hours to figure out that the Hischi Zoe was the Zoe was actually a Hischi and she tricked you to leave, so there's now two groups of five. Yeah, right. Okay.
Right.
I hate that shit.
And I've alluded to this scene before, but this was like, this probably was my most folded arms harumph scene of the movie. Because
your curmudgeon moment.
Evan is, at this point in the movie, Evan is full blown on, there is Hischi team, I know it's real, and we're like in huge trouble right now.
Right.
He sees this Zoe girl who has a super injured ankle by herself, giving vague and out of character recommendations. Right. And he just does it.
He's like,
okay. Yeah, but he was getting the sex.
No.
No,
this guy, like, it, sure, okay, you have like a little bit of confusion, a little bit of uncertainty, a little bit of uncanniness. To verify everything, it would take you less than 10 seconds. Less than 10 seconds to walk into the room and talk about if this is the plan. And because you suspect that there's a Hischi, you might also suspect that the Hischi might suspect you suspect a Hischi. So therefore, it might try to trick you, thus giving you a person by themselves in this situation, giving you out of character and vague and kind of creepy vibes. Not a single one of your spidey senses go off and you just and then you're like, oh my gosh, there's five people left there.
Oh, like, no, five.
I could not comprehend Evan in that moment. Like, what the fuck are you doing, man?
You know what would have, like,
it was so silly.
Made that make more sense in a kind of much more organic way, even though, like, I'm rewriting this movie. But, let's say Evan figures out, like, he goes and checks and is like, oh, that was a fake Zoe. That was a Hischi trying to separate us. Mm-hmm. The four that we're going to leave. And Evan's like, no, I have to stay or else the remaining become five. But then let's say Peyton comes here and drags him away. Right? Actually forces him to leave on a real reason. Yeah. Right? It's like, no, you've been away too long. Like you
we're supposed to hang out.
You spend time. Yeah. So and that would actually maybe reinforce that kind of brother relationship a little bit more that was briefly touched upon.
Yeah.
But like at least having him leave for a reason that's out of his control and not something that's completely in his control, or I guess I got tricked by this Hischi that I suspect is here, but I'm gonna get tricked anyway.
Yeah,
like, well, an actual organic reason for Evan to leave to make the rest of the house be a group of five would have been better than him being that so easily tricked. Mm-hmm.
Well, it if you want to be an apologist about it, then like it circles back to like what are the powers of this demon, and maybe there is a way for them to like. Maybe all these demons that we, like, why aren't these people acting with their self-preservation or common sense? Maybe these demons all have a common sense suppression ability that is just sort of, like, part of their power set, where it's just like...
But that's the only explanation.
Right?
Because it's not it, like,
satisfying.
He's not drunk or high at this point. He's, like, completely sober. I don't know. Like, what's an equivalent? It'd be like looking at a boat you're about to take across the ocean, and, like, the hull is just... There's a huge hole in it. And you're just looking at it for like hours. Huh. And then you get on the boat and it sinks. Like, that is the level of the decision that Evan made in that situation.
Yes.
All right. Hear me out. What if, once again, rewriting this movie, huge plot twist, there are actually two histories.
Oh my god.
Okay.
That would be fucking cool, huh? I don't know.
That would have been a good twist for us, the audience, yeah.
But like the two histories are able to like deceive two people at once, you know?
Yeah, maybe. I think that would be
interesting. I think like a definitely like having the conclusion be, you know, the group is separated into two groups of five, that's really important. But like how they get there, it was really
felt lazy.
Whether we as an audience member would buy in or not. And in this one, it was pretty weak. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty weak reason for them to get split into two groups of five.
Yeah. And then like when Evan finally gets back, because he's sort of cottoned on to this Hisji thing, I guess 12 hours after seeing all the evidence, it just took him a while to work it out. And you know what? I'll be more generous. Give him a multiple of five. It took him 10 hours to figure it out.
Yes.
So
yes.
he goes there and the house is in disarray, and there's like a bathtub full of water with a toaster in it, and there's a noose in a closet, and there's a, I think, a couple other things, but there's no bodies anywhere. And I thought that, you know, that was like scary, but I thought it would have been more scary if we actually saw even a little bit more of an aftermath of all these people who were compelled to suicide by this Hisji monster. And by the time he sees it, like, he's horrified.
Maybe the Hisji is behind The Happening. You remember that movie?
Maybe. I never saw The Happening, but it's plants attack Mark Wahlberg.
Plants make people kill themselves.
Ah, yes.
In that movie. So right. Maybe Hisji is behind the plants.
Maybe. That's an M. Night Shyamalan, right?
That's right.
So anyway, yeah. We see that, like, these five people have been killed, they're gone, we don't know where they are, and then everyone else comes back, and you know, or he sees Zoe and she's like being all weird, and then she starts counting like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 when all the people come by and they cross over this very obvious barrier of a blood circle. God. Where it's like,
that just
why is nobody looking down even a little bit?
We've gone over this, people don't look down, especially you two.
It's hugely
the amount of times you two have tripped over my dash cam cord is uncountable. Uncountable. People don't look down. I don't want to hear your argument of why don't you look down. You two do not look down. You are should be the
little... your dash cam cord is like a thin little thing.
It was dark, like, Luke.
This was like 6 or 7 inches wide of blood circle in a lit area.
So anyway,
people don't look down. Okay.
All right. Okay. Fine. They're too panicked to notice. They don't pay attention. And then they get there, and then obviously the Hisji wants to fuck with Evan for figuring it out, because it compels everybody else to do their suicide plan while he has to like stop them. And I thought that sort of panic was intense. And this is the scene that I mentioned in the trigger warning part with, I think it was Victoria, where she just takes the pocket knife and cuts her wrists, and everyone's just like, what the fuck? And then, like, everybody else, like, what is it, Brian?
There's so many different ways to go
wraps
about it.
Plastic wrap around his face, and Nico's drinking bleach, and ugh.
And Evan's trying to stop them. Like, that whole sequence was so unnerving and so shot so well, too. Yeah.
And just, like, pleading with them to stop, and they're not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, like, a poorer movie would have, like, really, I don't like to use this word, but probably glorified it a bit more and shown it a bit longer. But, like, we see what they're about to do, and we see them do it, but it doesn't linger on that shot very long. It, like, the camera very quickly leaves the house, and all we hear is Evan's voice telling them to stop doing that.
Yeah.
So, like, I found like, the quickness of it and the unnervingness of it and, like, the kind of brutality of it was, like, much more effective than if, like, you know, this was a shitty horror movie where it was just, like, showing the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, just giving the context, the quick context, and then just hearing Evan's screams and yells, that was really powerful.
It's enough that you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know what's going, like, you're just like, oh, no. And then he burns himself alive, maybe, or maybe not.
Well, okay, so question about Hisji Evan. At the very beginning of the movie, we see Evan as the Hisji in the car, right? Like, it's the bright green eyes, and he's sitting there. And
when you say at the very beginning, do you mean the very end?
No, at the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
The very first time we see Evan, we hear his voiceover, or somebody's voiceover, explaining what the Hisji is, and or explaining what the monster...
I thought it was just a word crawl or something.
Yeah, maybe, but it says it's green eyes and shapes it, and then the very next, like, we see Evan looking exactly like that thing.
Oh yeah, yeah, the very first shot, like when he drops his friends off at the airport.
Are we supposed to think that maybe that first shot is after all of this in the movie, and he's just out there and about, or was he a Hischi before all of this?
I think maybe he just had green eyes. I think that's like, and it's like, it's
but it was heightened.
It was very.
Like those were heightened green eyes.
Yeah, I made a note of that too, where I was like, a creature with green eyes and pale skin, and then we see this kid who's this pale kid with big bright green eyes, and I was like, that's so wild. They wouldn't make him be the monster right off the bat. That's just like an interesting parallel, or maybe it plants that seed. But I don't think he was his G before that.
I don't think so either. So my theory is that first shot of the movie is actually after everything that we see in the movie.
Or he's dropping his friends off at the airport is actually
maybe after
the end.
Mm. Yeah.
Maybe. And maybe he knows it's a final destination. It recontextualizes that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool theory.
That's an interesting. I mean, it
doesn't really change anything of the story or the feeling of the movie, but since we are like pretty certain Evan is Hischian at the end, why not?
I was waiting for his brother to be like, you should come hang out with me. It's me and four friends. And then Evan being like, oh, that makes five people.
Yeah. Or even more subtly, just name four people.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we have to like infer the,
That might have been too on the nose though.
It'll be me.
Because I think it's already like, it's like, you don't have to hint at it. It's pretty much just a given that by the end of the movie, when Payne picks up Evan is not Evan, and Evan is the history.
Yeah. I really liked that history part too, where it's going between all the people, like the shapeshifting all at once.
Yeah. Gave me some Animorphs vibes.
Yeah. And also a Scanner Darkly, the Protean suit.
Sure. And then like when the hand is holding up the fingers, it does those like morphs between the different people's hands. It's like, oh, good use of Adobe Pro. Guys, good job. I guess final thoughts. We're at 80 minutes here. Getting close. Alex, any last things?
Yeah, like, just was a pretty slow burn, but I thought it was interesting throughout the whole time just because I was primed to just keep, like I had my eyes wide open. It was like looking at background things and trying to count the amount of people every time and seeing all the fibers. Like, just the set design, the camera work, and it was just beautifully shot, this movie. Yeah. Like, when it pans across the desert, and the scenery, and brightness, just had me interested the whole time until the tension really happened, which was really, like, I would say the last quarter of the movie is when, like,
shit not was going even, down. The last 10%. Like, it was so quick.
It was really late, but the payoff was great, and, you know, little hiccups aside, really cool story, and interesting way to tell it, and I feel like it's as insufferable as Max was. This was like pretty relatable to like a lot of people's experiences in their early to mid 20s, right? Just like meeting new people, partying, and feeling like you don't really belong, and wanting to stay, getting away from your family, you know, whether it's your parents or your older brother who tracks you with his phone. It was like a little coming of age movie that where everybody dies.
That's right.
I mean, it reminded me, I haven't had that many experiences with parties because I was never a huge partier, but one time in my 20s I went up to Banff for a weekend and stayed in a hostel, which is an experience. And we're in there, and then we're in the like hostel bar at the bottom of the building, and this like woman comes in and she's like, I gotta move all my stuff out and I need people to help. Who wants to come to this address and help me move? I've got beer and weed to pay you. And then like a bunch of people went with this person. I did not. I was kind of like, what the hell is going on?
That's
and
a so history right there.
Maybe that was a history moment. It was like just this like this. She was so drunk and she was just like, we gotta move, the lease is up, who's coming, I got beer and weed and you can help me move out of my house. And I was like, that sounds like a fun activity on a Saturday night, just like help a drunk person move in the middle of the night. Nothing sus here. So maybe my preservation instinct is better than I thought after all.
Thank you, Ray.
Yeah. So got a final thought, Luke?
Just nothing I wouldn't say at a rating. So I'll hold off.
Okay. Yeah, same. I liked it. It was fun. And it definitely proved that I'm too old to hang with late night parties anymore. Just no. They were all drinking two nights in a row. I mean, I don't drink anymore, but they were just... I didn't even go that hard when I was drinking. Like, and so much tequila. So much tequila. Oh, my God. Reminds me of my university days. My early university days. So, scariest part. Scariest part of the movie, Alex.
Scariest part... Probably the very end when everyone's killing themselves in different methods and it just pans out. It's just very shocking. Really gruesome. Kind of scary. Yeah, it's a tough scene to watch and listen to, so that'll be my scariest part.
Sure thing.
Yeah, I would say Victoria or Vanessa's self-harm, whoever she was.
Mm. Yeah, that was rough. I think for my scariest part, it was almost to the very end, but it was just a really hard cut between somebody standing and then somebody with their head to the side smiling. I think that was Zoe right at the very end when she gets Evan to burn down the little shack. I just, all those transitions like get me, like in, I think it's in Insidious when he's looking through the little rotoscope thing and like the ghosts appear and then they're like, they're position, like anytime a position changes really quickly and the smile is really big and creepy, you're just like
a slight head tilt.
Just like a little inclined head is
Insidious does that so well now that I think about it. There's so many great little head tilts in that.
Yeah, so that's my scariest part, but overall this movie is actually pretty tense and pretty scary, so it's good. But we gotta rate it. And usually we rate it out of 5, so perfect for a his G.
Oh.
If we rate it 5 out of 5, we're going to get his G'd. So, got to watch out. But Alex, what are you going to rate it out of?
Well, it was, I actually really laughed because, you know, one of the characters, after they tell the scary stories, she's like, I don't remember who it was, but she's like, time for cinnamon whiskey.
Oh, yeah,
so it's Camille. Like, we all know it's Fireball, right? And... at the wedding last week at the Toonie bar there were multiple fireballs done that night, which I heavily regret every time.
That's funny because that's what we get for winning trivia, like the local trivia here in Nelson. If your team wins, you all get a shot of Fireball.
Oh my god. Fucking sucks, but we like anytime someone offers it to me I hate it, but then I do it anyway. So it's really my own goddamn fault.
So maybe you don't have good self-preservation instincts.
Yeah, I don't. So we are going to rate this out of 5 fireballs.
Nice. Come, please. We don't have product placement. 5 cinnamon whiskeys.
All right, 5 cinnamon whiskeys.
Go ahead.
I really like this movie. It's the kind of horror movie that I enjoy where it's like kind of slow but interesting the whole time. And then like really kind of thunderous conclusion. So tense. Especially like as you the audience member knows what's going on and knows that there's an extra person. And I've said this so many times where I kept like looking in the background and counting, and I thought the set design was awesome, especially when Evan gets back to the house at the end and it's all like sideways and cups are upside down and pyramids and it's super weird. And anytime like a fiver happened, you know, when there were 5 props, just like I think This movie is probably worth a rewatch just to see the amount of kind of little Easter eggs that they have for the theme. So yeah, I really liked it. So I will give this a 3.75 cinnamon whiskey shots out of 5.
Nice. All right, Luke.
Yeah, I mean, the experience of watching this movie was pretty awesome because it is quite tense and I like the cinematography. I like the art design. I really liked the setting. I liked how the kind of spooks were orchestrated and they happened slowly and then all at once and then slowly again and then kind of non-existent. There were like a lot of times where it felt like there should be a scare here and it didn't happen, so it kind of was messing with your expectations a lot. So everything experientially and viscerally of this movie is, I would say, really high quality. I think we've demonstrated that it's a film that maybe doesn't stand up as strong on reflection because of a lot of the logical things that once you think about it a certain way, you're like, I don't know. And so obviously those get me a little bit more. than other people, I think. So I liked this movie. I liked this movie a lot when I watched it, and I like it a little bit less after I've watched it, when I've thought about it a little bit. And right. even when the movie was happening, I was like, oh, why aren't there more scenes like that camera panning scene? Because that was genius.
Such a good
I
one.
Wanted more of that, you know? But it is a cool idea that I would love to see fleshed out more. And it has been done well, actually. This is a very similar type of story to Stephen King's The Outsider, which is like an 8-part TV show on HBO. So if you've never seen that, it's really good. Ben Mendelsohn is the lead in that one. Ooh. And he does an awesome job. So I'm going to give this 3 cinnamon whiskeys out of 5.
3 cinnamon whiskeys.
It was really, really good, but kind of doesn't make sense on reflection.
Yeah, we call those the refrigerator revelations, where you watch a movie and then like you don't think about it, or then you're like looking in the fridge for a snack later and you're like, wait, how come? So yeah.
Like another one, did none of them notice these hundreds of pairs of fives now in their house?
No. The history monster makes you not notice that. They're really hung over, Luke. Yeah.
That was funny.
I think, you know, it's been, I love doing the show and I love watching all the horror movies, and it's nice to get a surprise that, you know, kind of hits you and compels you and doesn't make you roll your eyes too hard while you're watching it. The movies that are like really groaningly bad while you're watching them have a different sort of merit, but this one was such an interesting time. It was tense. It kept me on the edge of my seat and kept me guessing until the very end, and I thought it was great. So I'm going to give this one a full 4 cinnamon whiskey shots out of 5. Non-alcohol for me, please. So I guess that's just
the whiskey or just the cinnamon.
Yeah, non-alcohol cinnamon water. Just the whiskey, please. Cinnamon water. Even when I did drink, I did not like Fireball.
Nobody likes Fireball, Billy.
Oh, okay.
15-year-olds do.
15-year-olds. Oh, yeah. So 4 out of 5 for me. And that'll take us into the something to cheer section, which I can't wait to hear what Luke's is. I think I know what it is. But we'll go with Alex first.
Okay, yeah. My something to cheer is last week I watched Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, okay.
And oh my god, I had so much fun watching this movie.
I heard it was so good.
It's so good. I loved it. I think it's exactly how you make a sequel to a beloved movie from the 80s. Yeah. Like everything about it was like just, it was nostalgic, but it was also like different. It wasn't the exact same story, which, you know, some things fall into just to like be like, oh, this was a good movie because it was the same movie. No, it was a different movie, a different plot, but like they immediately played Danger Zone and they had a beach scene. So it was like all the stuff of Top Gun that people love, but like with a modern retelling and great characters. And holy shit, does Miles Teller look like Anthony Edwards?
Oh, does he?
Yeah. Wow. So like Miles Teller plays Rooster, which is Goose's son.
Yeah.
And like they both have that mustache. It's like great casting from their part. They look identical.
Wow.
And there's so many throwbacks to like the original Top Gun, but then like the telling of it was good, and it was like perfectly ambiguous as who they're fighting, just like in the original. And
the enemy, it's the enemy.
The enemy, yeah. But like, and like the scenes of like when they're flying the jets and you're in the cockpit with them, they look so good, the sounds and everything. Like this is a theater movie, and I had so much fun watching this. Like I hate people that stand up and clap in movies. Like when I watched Force Awakens, the amount of people that fucking clapped, I was like, stop it. I didn't clap when I watched Top Gun Maverick, but I wanted to.
Oh wow.
That's how much I was like, oh, I'm getting so excited for everything that's happening right now. Oh, so yeah, it. Top Gun Maverick is my cheer. So fun. Good. Highly recommend.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And apparently they did like all the shots in the cockpits. Like they were actually up there in the planes flying around and had to like manage the cameras.
Tom Cruise movie.
And makeup
no
on
CGI.
Their own. Yeah. No CGI.
Yeah. Yeah. It was beautiful.
Nice. All right, Luke.
Well, So you might think I'm going to cheer the Obi-Wan Kenobi show.
Oh, I did think you were going to cheer the Obi-Wan Kenobi
show. That show's only 3 episodes in, so we have to wait. The jury is still out.
Okay. Okay, okay.
So I'm actually cheering a different show called Severance.
Oh.
Which is on Apple TV, and it stars Adam Scott, and John Turturro is in it, and Christopher Walken and Patricia Arquette are the other famous people, and then a number of other people. And I can't really, like, it's revealed in the first episode, but it is technically a spoiler, so I'm not going to reveal the actual kind of main plot point that makes this movie so interesting.
Okay.
But it's kind of like part workplace comedy, part dystopia, part philosophy of identity, part what do you owe other people. And it is like a fascinating premise that is expertly made. Ben Stiller directs a lot of it. Hmm. And Adam Scott just gives this kind of amazingly restrained lead performance in this show. And so it's like the first season, I think, has 9 episodes, and the entire 9th episode, all 45 minutes, I'm on the edge of my seat watching what's happening.
I've heard, like, Severance
is
good.
It was so gripping and so interesting. And I'm not, like, there are other shows or movies or works of fiction that I think have delved into this area before, but this show feels so unique in how it does it, and I was just gripped. So if any of you ever get a chance to watch Severance, it is awesome. And the last scene of the last episode, I like cried out with like happiness and appreciation for what the show did. Yeah. Nice.
So you orgasmed.
Like I had a TV show orgasm, because the very, obviously there's so many plot points I'm not going to tell you for spoilers and complication reasons, but the very last like 30 seconds of the first season is like, TV show orgasm type of shout out.
Yeah. Cool.
So, Severance, great show.
Okay. Okay.
I can't wait for the second season.
It's exciting.
Love me some Severance.
That's right.
Yep. Alex, have you caught up on Obi-Wan? Have you watched the Obi-Wan show?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like I want to talk about that scene in episode 3, and maybe we can cut it out and put it behind the Patreon spoilers, but yes, absolutely. 100%.
No hesitation.
I'm down. Yeah. Anyway.
Is that your cheer?
Obi-Wan Kenobi spoilers. No, my cheer. I told the cheer thing. My cheer is that after, you know, my big move and my mom visiting, we finally got my bike shipped out to Montreal, and I dropped it off at the start of May to get it put together because I don't have the tools or a bike stand to like assemble it myself. And this week I finally picked up my bike from the bike shop. It was all assembled, and I've been like riding around. I love going for bike rides so much, and I'm so glad that my bike is back. So that's my cheer. My cheer is not just watching TV. I'm actually getting out in the So yeah, my cheer is the bike rides that I'm going on. And I'm going on a bike ride after this, so I can't wait to go explore more of the bike paths and see what's what and just sort of ride around. Whew. So this is a long episode, but it's actually going to be a little bit shorter. There's going to be some Patreon content, though, people, if you want to hear us talk about a certain Star Wars series that has, at time of recording, only 3 episodes out. But that's going to end us for our Nothing to Fear episode. Okay, Luke's gone. I'll just do the credits.
Stay for another, 30, 40 seconds?
No, he can't do it. So if you like the show, please let us know. Give us a rating on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your pods. And consider joining the Patreon for as little as $1 a month. You can get some cool exclusive content. We've done some trailer breakdowns and trailer reactions and a couple little snippets that I've been cutting out, spoilery things. And you can go over to the Patreon, patreon.com/nothingtofear, and you can join us there. Thank you to Alex. I'm not saying thank you to Luke because he left during the credits. So thank you, Alex, for joining me every week and making horror movies with me. It's so great. And thanks.
Yeah, we make the horror movies, of course.
Right. Making horror movie podcast with me. And yeah, thanks everyone for listening. Tell your friends about it. It helps more people find the show. We'd love to get more listens and more downloads and all those things. And you can hear our ramblings. And you can find us on other places. Alex,
where can the fine people find you?
You can follow my daily playlist, daily song playlist on one song a day on Instagram, WAN, all one word. Yeah, I'll post this new song there every day, and there's an updated playlist.
Updated playlist available in the bio. You can do that. And we padded enough time, so Luke is back. Hey, Luke, where can the people find you?
Really True Fiction or The Liberal Soul, available on all the podcasting apps of your choice, as well as if you live in Nelson, British Columbia, Canada, you can listen to Full Spectrum Cinema at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Tuesdays, as I talk about a movie there, too.
Sounds
Cooney
great.
Co-op Radio, 93.5.
Yes, or you can go to that link that's Lexicorm. It's in the show notes.
Mixcloud.com/Lexicorm.
Check the show notes, folks.
L-E-X-A-C-O-R-M.
Yeah, it's great.
Mm-hmm. We've done some really cool movies on there. No, not many horrors, but some really movies.
What's your favorite one of recent times?
Well, we did The Fisher King, the most recent one, and I'd never seen that before, so that was kind of fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's a different flavor of movie review and breakdown.
That's right.
All right, so next week we're finishing off our summer month with June, and it's my pick. And this one is controversially in the horror genre, but it is...
Oh, no. Really has stopped us before.
Did you do extensive research on this?
I did extensive research. I read most of one article about it, and it's... I just really want to watch this movie. I really want to talk about it with you guys for the podcast. So we are going to be watching Jaws for the last episode of summer month, because that's a perfect summertime movie. You're going swimming, you're in the ocean. When... Luke, when you said you were doing a movie about the beach, when you picked, I thought, Luke's picking Jaws, and then you didn't, so I'm picking Jaws because I love that
movie. I haven't
watched
this movie in so long.
Yeah, I've seen it. I think we've all seen it. We must have.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to chat about it in a horror capacity, so tune in for Jaws next week. And until then, remember, folks, they're just movies. There's nothing to fear.